Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 14. Dave, the day is upon us. NFL season opens today. There's not a game I'm looking forward to more than Steelers-Ravens except this game, Green Bay-New Orleans. This should be a fun one to watch. Two great quarterbacks, two very good teams. Certainly look like they're going to be in contention all the way down to the end of the postseason.
Yeah, I can't wait. Hey, you know, let's start off with this. Football's back. You know, we talked about all offseason. Boy, what a long offseason it was, especially when you run a podcast and there's not too much to talk about.
Nothing to talk about.
Other than Dancing with the Stars and, you know, an occasional interview here or there. So, oh, man, I'm excited. I think I'll actually be able to watch this game all the way through, too, without having to do work on the side as well.
Fantastic stuff. Well, we got a great interview today with John Eisenberg of CSN Baltimore. Some really insightful stuff for those people out there who really aren't keeping close tabs on the Ravens or who haven't really gotten cranked up yet now that we're playing real football, done with the preseason. John was kind enough to spend about 25 minutes with us previewing Baltimore. So let's get right to that in part one, and we'll come back in part two and just take a look at the landscape around the NFL. So without further ado, here's our interview with John Eisenberg. Big football week, the Steelers and the Ravens getting at it. And we're pleased to have as our guest John Eisenberg. John's a longtime distinguished columnist who covered the Ravens for the Baltimore Sun and now follows them for CSNBaltimore.com. You can find his work there. John, thanks for joining us on the Terrible Podcast.
Happy to be with you.
Hey, John, let's get right at it. The CBA comes to conclusion. They start signing some papers, and all of a sudden there's some house cleaning going on down at Ravens headquarters. Is this something that people saw coming through the course of the summer, or did this catch people by surprise?
No, it was a complete blindside. Nobody saw it coming. They cut Derek Mason, I'll say this. They cut Willis McGahee. Everybody saw that coming. Willis was going to make $6 million this year. He's a backup, and everybody knew they were going to cut him. And Kelly Gregg, defensive lineman, very good for a number of years, a little bit less, gas tanks getting a little low. That one didn't surprise too many people, but the cutting of Derek Mason and Todd Heap was completely out of nowhere. That's the number one and two all-time receivers in franchise history, and guys that played okay last year, pretty well, as a matter of fact. And so when that happened, people were just absolutely floored. It really, really shocked everybody, including the players.
Let's talk about real quick the additions that they made. Vonta Leach, I believe, was brought in. Lee Evans, of course, was acquired via trade. Can you bring our listeners up to speed real quick on a couple of the other additions?
Yeah, Vonta Leach is the fullback, and Lee Evans is the deep threat that they feel has been lacking for a couple of years in their receiving core, certainly has been lacking. And they hope that he's going to fill that role, stretch the field a little bit. There's been a lot of goings on with the line. The line has had some holes. They had a shortage of tackles. They wound up signing Bryant McKinney, who's been with the Vikings for 9 years. The Vikings had cut him on partially because of the salary cap and also partially because there had been, he came to camp weighing 370 pounds, and I think the Vikings felt that they just had enough of Bryant. So the Ravens brought him in to be their left tackle. They shifted Michael Orr to right tackle. Michael was at left tackle last year, and they moved him to right tackle with McKinney coming in. They also have been unclear about the status of Matt Burke, the center. He underwent knee surgery in August, minor surgery. He didn't play in the preseason. Status unclear, and he's expected to start on Sunday. With his status unclear, they went out and got Andre Garrard from the Cowboys, who had been cut. So, that's the guy who's made the Pro Bowl the last 5 years. So So, I mean, they've made a lot of additions. You know, they also brought in Ricky Williams, you know, to back up Ray Rice. These are all veteran guys that they've brought in. They're established pros. They've had pretty good track records. It's not a bunch of young guys, that's for sure. It's mid-career guys, the veterans, that they're hoping will give them a little bit more, a little better running game, a little more explosion in the example of Lee Evans.
Kind of staying on the running game, I mean, on the offensive line there real quick, you mentioned the addition of McKinney. You know, I was kind of surprised the Vikings cut him loose too, and I thought it was possibly a good add to the Ravens offensive line if indeed McKinney could get back in shape and all. This is an offensive line that I think gave up, what, 40 sacks last year. Is McKinney looking like he's rounded into shape since signing, and how has Ower taken to the switch to the right side? Because the interior of line with Yonda and Grubbs looks to be pretty good. So, you know, how are those tackle positions shaping up?
Yeah, the interior is real solid. The tackle is where there's questions. Ower had no problem switching to the right side. You know, Ower is a pretty good kind of. He's a pretty high character guy. He's got, you know, he's a team first guy. He's young, but he really has some admirable qualities to him. I mean, you know, and if you've seen the movie and read the book or whatever, I mean, a lot of that stuff, you know, I'll say this, you know, they raised a pretty good kid. He really is like, you know, whatever it takes. So, you know, nice to see that. McKinney, you know, rounding into shape, that's a good phrase because he's big. And, you know, sometimes you look at him walking off the field, he looks like he can barely make it off the field. But you watch him in workouts and in drills, he's pretty agile and, you know, he mauls people. He looks pretty good. I mean, the question with him is, can he play four quarters? I mean, you know, the Vikings did have some questions about his durability and his conditioning. So we'll see. I mean, the proof is going to be, I mean, that's what everyone's talking about in Baltimore is, will the offensive line hold up? And the fact that these five guys have never played one down together and their first snap will be against the Steelers, you know, with one of the best defenses in the league, bringing all these blitz packages disguised. You know, do they have the communication down to handle that stuff? I think a lot of people are thinking, well, no, they probably don't. So, I mean, that could be something that the Steelers could definitely exploit.
And, John, I think you wrote a little bit about streamlining the play calling as a result of that. Is there any chance over the course of the season that we would see Burke and Garrod on the field at the same time? Is there a chance that one of them would move to guard and they would move guys around without a serious injury? Or is Garrod really signed as a depth thing because of Burke's bursa sack injury?
Well, I cannot believe. I mean, that's a good question you're asking. I don't know. I mean, they're really set at guard. I mean, those guards are good. You know, Ben Grubbs and Yonda, you know, Marshall Yonda was one of the best, biggest free agents on the market this year. So they're really set at guard. I cannot believe they're bringing in Garrod, who's 33, I believe, just to sit. You know, I mean, this was just a case where they wanted to make sure that they had a good center. And so between the two of them, they will. We'll see. I mean, you know, Burke's injury is, I mean, he had his knee drained after every game last year. I mean, he's 36 years old. This is probably his last year in football. So, you know, they just wanted to have insurance. I don't think they know how it's going to play out yet.
Yep.
I think that they just wanted to have insurance. And, you know, I'll give them credit for being proactive in covering their bases.
We look at the skilled guys there still on offense, and you got Dixon and Pita, two young tight ends who are more known for their pass-catching ability than their blocking ability. You've got Ricky Williams, who I would assume is going to get 5 to 10 touches a game. Well, how do you see the offense developing behind Flacco? Is this an offense that's going to be very balanced running and throwing the ball going forward, or do you think they'll be relying on Ray Rice primarily out of the chute?
Well, I think they're going to be relying on Ray always. They do want to be balanced. Their number one priority coming out of last season was to get the running game going again because there was severe fall off last year. They went from 4.7 yards a carry to 3.9, which actually is a huge thing for a team that's had a good running game for a number of years and has really sort of built everything around that running game. It just disappeared. The blocking wasn't good enough. Rice was a little more picky on, you know, coming to the line, and it was a real problem. So, you know, they're hoping to get that running game going again, and that just changes everything. I mean, that would teams last year, Pittsburgh being at the forefront of it, could stack the box last year because the Ravens didn't have a deep threat. They knew that Mason and Bolden and T.J. Houshmandzadeh could not get past them, could not get behind them, so they could stack the box. That hurt the running game.
And I got to tell you, John, it made Dave and I wonder why a guy like Dont'a Stallworth, who had that kind of speed, really never saw the field.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that was they brought him in last year. They threw him two balls. They ran a few reverses. They mostly went for 10-yard losses. So it was kind of strange, their use of him. I mean, I think that was a left-hand, right-hand thing. The personnel people brought him in, and I don't think the coaches liked him.
Yep.
For what reason, I don't know, but they definitely, I think that was a misplay. I mean, they needed the speed. So Evans is really the key in a lot of respects to what they want to do this year. I think Bolden will do better. If they can get some, and they've already thrown a couple of deep balls to Evans in the preseason, it looks pretty promising there. So that'll open up the field a little bit for Bolden and also for the running game. So it all sort of goes together.
Will they use 3 and 4 receiver sets with these young guys who haven't caught a pass yet in the NFL?
I'm not sure. I think you might see 2 tight end sets more than 3 receiver sets. Those tight ends, Torrey Smith, I mean, the receivers, Torrey Smith, Tandon Doss, David Reed. I'm not sure where they're going with them yet. I mean, they there's some potential there, especially with Torrey Smith, who's really fast. But he did not have a good preseason at all. So I'm not sure whether he's really ready to step in. Now the tight ends, Dixon and Pitta, they're kind of interesting. They're very athletic and they can get down the field, and Pitta has incredible hands. So I think you're going to see 2 tight ends more than 3 receivers.
Let's switch over, John, to the defensive side of the ball. It looks like from everything we're seeing over on this end that Kerry Williams and Jimmy Smith are going to be the starting corners against the Steelers. And I think they have one game started between the two of them. Of course, Smith is a rookie draft pick, their first rounder. And, is this just basically because, is this just the movement starts now to youth where Chris Carr and the other corner over there, Dominique Foxworth, could they just not win the spots over there? And, is that going to be a fear of the Ravens heading into this season, this young set of cornerbacks?
Well, I mean, it's kind of amazing the way that's all worked out. I mean, Foxworth is coming off a torn ACL, and he, as is often the case, the beginning of the year, he's just not ready. He'll be playing. I mean, by the middle of the year, he'll be better, and by the end of the year, he'll be fine. But at the start, you can't start him. And Chris Carr pulled a hamstring in training camp and didn't play much. You know, those are veteran guys, pretty dependable. But I think what the Ravens are trying to do with their defense, Greg Madison, who was a coordinator for the last few years, a solid pro. He went to Michigan, University of Michigan, as a defensive coordinator. I mean, he's been at it forever. He knows what he's doing, but he wasn't real aggressive. And I think that there was a feeling inside the building that they needed to ramp it up a degree and just to be more of an attacking defense, because they sat back and let too many things happen to them, even though they had a good year. And they always have a good defense, but too many things were happening to them, including the last drive in the playoff game where Pittsburgh eliminated them, right? They went deep, that wasn't the first time that happened. So I think it all is part of it. They brought in Chuck Pagano, who was a secondary coach and is a real fiery guy, and he's sort of got a mandate, more blitzing, more aggression, and putting these young corners out there is part of it. You know, they've had the one thing Carr, Foxworth, these other guys that they had last year, Josh Wilson, they're all 6 feet and shorter. Jimmy Smith is 6'2". Kerry Williams is 6'2". They're sort of spidery guys, and they're going to use press coverage. They're just going to be more aggressive. You know, my take, I mean, Kerry Williams, is just a couple years removed from a practice squad. I mean, I'll believe it when I see it. He had a good preseason. I'm not sure about him, how much he'll hold up. You know, Jimmy Smith is a stud. I mean, whether he's ready in his first game in the NFL, I don't know, but he spent the preseason. I mean, really, nobody created a lot of separation from him, and he's very physical, and they love him. And so, you know, well, I mean, that's something that's probably he can probably be exploited early on here, but I think in the long run they've got a pretty good cornerback there. So I mean, they're just going to throw him out there. I mean, it is a little bit of a gamble, and they could get burned on Sunday.
Kind of staying on the secondary real quick here. Does it even really matter if you know who's going to start at safety alongside Reed? I mean, Bernard Pollard and Zbikowski, those two guys are pretty interchangeable and pretty good, solid, strong safeties. And I guess they're going to give the nod to Zbikowski at first. Is that correct?
Well, that's what it sounds like. I mean, Pollard told people yesterday. It didn't come from the coaches. Pollard said, you know, I'm not starting, which is kind of a surprise. He had a good preseason. He's a big, he's like a linebacker back there. And you know, he sort of goes into the hard-hitting mentality they like to have. So, yeah, both guys are good. And that's probably their strongest position. I mean, they're really strong at safety. So, with Ed Reed as well. So, they're solid there.
And for the front seven, we expect pretty much the same. The big change being Terrence Cody, the second-round pick out of Alabama last year, is going to play the nose with Nada playing inside. Tell me how Nada's going to line up in that 3-4, and then anything new to look for from the linebackers. And as Sergio Kindle made, I guess, a relatively impressive recovery after his head injury last year, is he going to see the field at all here in these first couple weeks?
Yeah, I think he will. I mean, Sergio, he's fine. I mean, there's been endless talk about him, you know, and his career, and will he ever even be able to play football again? Well, he's fine. He can play, and now it's down strictly to football. We'll see. The guy that really had the best preseason among sort of the new names, Paul Kruger, in his third year,
Steeler fans remember him for his pick against Dixon, right, a couple of years ago?
Right. Well, they moved him. They've had problems with him. I mean, he's a second-round pick. They brought him in. They didn't love his work ethic. They moved him to the interior last year. He was not good there. But they put him back on the edge, and he's just been fierce. I mean, it's like the light bulb has come on. He's been their most improved player in the exhibition season. He's behind Suggs. I mean, Suggs will play as the starter. It's that role, sort of that rush-in hybrid linebacker thing. So they need a rush from somewhere other than Suggs. Corey Redding, I mean, the way they line it up with Cody over the center, you know, and Nada is offset as a tackle would be, and Redding on the end, and then Suggs is sort of rush-in. They move him around, and, you know, they flop it back and forth. And so it's an ever-changing defense, and they are desperate for some pressure from someone other than Suggs. So we'll see whether it's Redding or Kruger or Jared Johnson, or they had a rookie, Pernell McPhee, fifth-round pick, had an outstanding preseason, was sacking people left and right. So they may even throw him in there. So there's a, you know, just like they need better pass coverage, they need more of a pass rush, you know. Against Roethlisberger goes without saying. So the success, the times they've had success against the Steelers and Roethlisberger, it's when they've been able to get to him, pressure him, and hit him. And you know, they really need to do that.
We're talking with John Eisenberg of CSNBaltimore.com. You can follow John on Twitter at CSN Eisenberg. John, a couple minutes before we let you go, well, one of the things that everybody has talked about, we've talked about it a little bit as well, is everybody likes to rank the quarterbacks, rank them 1 to 32. Who's the best five? Who's the next group? And I think, you know, the guys who cause a lot of certainly a lot of debate are guys like Eli Manning and Joe Flacco. They've had different levels of success, but they've been able to get their teams to the playoffs pretty consistently. They seem to be well-liked by their teammates. What's the camp been like for Flacco, and what's your perception of how he's perceived internally?
Internally, I think they're pretty happy with him. Internally, they feel like, you know, he's improved every year. He has not come up big in the playoffs, no question about it. Not always his fault entirely. Certainly last year, I mean, Anquan Boldin dropped a ball in the end zone against the Steelers. Hushman Zada dropped a ball that would have given him a first down at the 30. And those are huge drops. balls that were right on the money. You know, Flacco, it's a little bit of a mixed bag, but I mean, results are results. But internally, what they like about him is he's got a great work ethic. He can make all the throws, and he's maturing. He's like a kid. I mean, they drafted him as a 22-year-old. He's now 26. He got married in the offseason. He wants to be in control of the offense. He's definitely butted heads with Cam Cameron over the fact that he didn't have the keys to the car. I think they're going to give him more of the keys this year. You know, he sort of is exuding that as he walks around. He's 10 pounds heavier. And, you know, the thing I like about him, he's a stand-up guy. Win, lose, or draw, he's the first guy in the press room. You know, it's my fault if it didn't go right. And, you know, he's a team guy. He never throws anyone under the bus. And, you know, I like that about him. I think that bodes well for his abilities as a leader. So, you know, he's developing, and I think they expect him to continue to develop this year, and they expect another playoff appearance. You know, that would be 4 in 4 years, so not too bad.
Does you know, there's so many niceties going on now when you interview these guys on both you know, both locker rooms and all like that. It's not like it used to be with the barbs flying quite a bit. You know, is this just the ultimate respect that two teams have for each other, or are both teams being, do you think, are being instructed just not to give the other team you know, bulletin board, you know, right before the game here? Of course, you know, if you date back this offseason with comments Lamar Woodley had on NFL Total Access and all, and the battle between Ray Rice and Ryan Clark really wasn't, you know, I think the media probably and us bloggers made more out of it than what it was. But what do you make of all this, all the niceties?
Well, I love what Terrell Suggs said yesterday, and he said, I think Woodley said the same thing, and that is, you know, the offseason stuff, man, we were bored. We were some bored football players this year, so don't put too much stock in that. I think they were just looking for something to do. I actually just finished writing a piece that I'm, you know, it's going up on CSN Baltimore that, you know, I think there's some reasons why it doesn't quite feel the same, and maybe isn't quite the same as usual. Number one, you know, 5 weeks ago, I mean, these guys were brothers in arms. You know, they were fighting the league, you know, trying to get this labor deal settled, and they were on the same side. And it's a little quick transition there. I mean, it's really, really fast. I think some of that is still lingering. You know, number two, I mean, week one, there's just nothing do or die about a game in week one, as important as it is. I mean, there's 15 weeks to go, and you know, I think it's really important for the Ravens' mental approach, but it is week one. I think number three, I mean, you know, there's a lot of 9/11 talk. That certainly puts things in perspective big time. And, you know, the game unfolds, and they'll be, I think by Sunday, you know, when they look at, they see each other's uniforms, I mean, you know, it's kind of like the Bulls with red, you know, I think that they'll get going. But the buildup is a little slow for sure. And I do think what you alluded to, you know, there's definitely a respect. I mean, I think these both teams, both these guys love the fact that this is the game that, you know, other team players on other teams want to play. And, you know, they've built a really good rivalry here. It's something that other players admire, and they're kind of proud of it. So I know the Ravens are. So I think that that's why you're seeing a little bit of the, you know, the virtual high fives instead of the barbs.
Plus, Joey Porter still is not around anymore, too. That helps.
Right. Right. Joey Porter, he helped a lot. And, you know, Suggs is pretty good at stoking it. But, you know, if you've been around Suggs at all, you realize, I mean, he's like a big kid, you know, he's just having fun. But even he was toned way down. He was not in his usual playful mood at all. So, you know, it's definitely not quite, as we call it, Steelers Week around here in Baltimore. It's not quite the same.
John, anything before we wrap up, anything on the special teams to take note of? It looks like you guys had the same specialist coming back. The Steelers are going to have Antonio Brown heavily involved in the return game, it looks like. But pretty much the same guys for the Steelers as well. Anything to note?
Well, the only thing that's to note, the specialists are really strong, Cundiff and Sam Cook. The Ravens feel real good about that. The only thing they did is they really kind of gutted their coverage team with the cuts there. They're sort of starting, not starting over, but Prescott Burgess they cut was their number one special teams tackler the last 2 years. Tavares Gooden, another key guy on special teams, they cut him. You know, that's two of their real go-to guys on special teams the last few years. So you're looking at some new blood there. Marcus Smith as well was another one. So there's going to be new blood there on the coverage, but the other side of the coin is with the new rule, the 35-yard cut kicks the ball through the uprights on every kickoff, so they barely ever cover a kickoff. So, you know, that would be a surprise. So yeah, maybe a little bit of punt coverage. But, you know, as far as the return game, they could have this rookie out there returning punts. Laquan Williams from Maryland made the team as an undrafted free agent and was really strong. So, and he's a local kid, a Baltimore kid, high school kid who made the team. And so that's kind of the feel-good story going on here.
Real quick before David gets you to promote your book and get you out of here, David Grard, is there going to be any interest, the Ravens going to have any interest in him?
Well, they're signing, seem to be signing every player like that. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, they play the cards close to the vest. Harbaugh didn't really want to talk about it yesterday. They really liked Tyrod Taylor in the preseason. He exceeded their expectations. Personally, I don't think they can go through a season with a rookie sixth-round pick. That's really a dangerous gamble. There's something about Taylor that's real impressive, but I don't know about yet. So it wouldn't surprise me that they're kicking the tires.
And, John, you've written a book on Vince Lombardi, his first season turning the team around. Just tell us the title of that and where our listeners can find that.
The name of the book is That First Season, and it's a book I wrote about the Packers, the changing of the guard that took place strictly when Lombardi took over in 1959. And it's a little told tale, a little slice of the football history of the Lombardi dynasty that a lot of people didn't know about. The fact that all those great players were on the team the year before, Horning, Taylor, Starr, and were really, their careers were going nowhere, they were floundering, the team barely won a game, and it's what Lombardi did to take a team, basically the same guys, and turn them from losers into winners, and set the course for his dynasty. It's a tale that certainly is relevant still today, and very interesting to see a good coach at work. I really had fun doing it. It's called That First Season. You can get it anywhere online, Amazon, and you know, any of the online places or bookstores.
Got to be a great tale of leadership.
Yeah, absolutely. I've gone around, promoted the book a lot, and let me tell you, I've had business groups call me and want to talk about this book because, you know, it's sort of what he did, how he prioritized a turnaround definitely resonates in other realms than football, and
sure.
So it's really interesting.
Hey, John, that's great insight today. Really appreciate that stuff. We'll get back with you certainly when the Steelers and the Ravens get back at it. We appreciate you taking the time here to talk to us in Pittsburgh on the Terrible Podcast.
I enjoyed it. Anytime. Thanks.
That's John Eisenberg. You can find his work at csnbaltimore.com, former beat writer for the Baltimore Sun, and you better be following John on Twitter, at csneisenberg. That's going to wrap things up here for this segment, and we'll come back and we'll take a look around the NFL. This is the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. I want to again thank John Eisenberg for his time and that insightful breakdown of the Ravens. Dave, you and I are going to come back with our game breakdown tomorrow, along with our picks for the first week. But we, of course, will make our picks for Green Bay, New Orleans game. We'll make that one at the end of the show today.
Yeah, most definitely. And, you know, we can get into a little bit of Steelers stuff here and, you know, a couple of the hot topics going around the NFL here.
Let's first, not much on the injury report. Tomlin touched on it on Tuesday at his presser, Monday in his presser, I guess, or whatever Tuesday, whatever day it was. There were two names on there that I was a little surprised to see in Cotchery and Gilbert. Give us the status update on those two guys along with Chris Carter.
You know, Cotchery, this is that same hamstring that he tweaked, you know, in that first action that he saw with the Steelers. I think it was against the Eagles in there. You know, he had a couple of nice catches in there. I think one was called back on a penalty. Then, of course, the touchdown catch there. But they yanked him after that hamstring tightened up. And it seems like he's kind of struggling with that. Of course, he was limited. We'll see how he does going on through the week. They're probably just being careful with him. Marcus Gilbert, that's a new injury. That's something that hadn't surfaced until the injury report yesterday, and we'll see what he does today. Chris Carter, this is a guy that's going to be inactive anyway. They're going to let that hamstring get nice and recovered for him because he's going to be a guy that can hopefully help on special teams down the line there. But, you know, an interesting, you know, we kind of went through our projective early inactives the other day. You know, the more you kind of look at this, you know, is if this concussion lingers for Gilbert, maybe Gilbert's the one down, and maybe Ramon Foster actually gets the helmet against the Ravens first game of the year there. Another question I want to get your kind of take on, of course, also let me add on to that, the Ravens, all 53 players practice for them, and that includes Lee Evans and Matt Burke, so those two guys look like they're going to be good to go. But Dennis Dixon, is this a guy that you you know, do you go ahead and make him inactive with this new rule and just carry two game day quarterbacks?
Yeah, you know, we didn't get into Dixon and Batch a lot in their last preseason game. Obviously, it was a bit of a disaster for Dennis Dixon, particularly early on. Didn't help himself any. I think you probably do make him inactive, and I think your point on Gilbert is right. You know, we've learned so much about concussions in the last 3 years. We're learning stuff about concussions every day with the Sidney Crosby press conference yesterday. It's a topic that I thought I was reasonably well-versed in. I learned a lot of stuff listening to the two doctors who spoke. When you see a guy who's concussed on Wednesday going into the Thursday practice for the Steelers, it makes me think there's no question he'll be down. I can't imagine if they didn't let him practice Wednesday for concussion and a guy who hasn't had all that many reps in his brief pro career that he's going to get a hat. So I'm going to readjust my estimation on that and say he's down. And we had Mark Caboli say earlier in the week that he thought because of Cotrie's hamstring, he could be down. So, you know, it may turn out that he gets both of those right and those two guys are down and the Steelers are able to, give helmets to two other guys. In terms of Dixon and the 53, don't have a strong view on that. I don't know what the Steelers' perspective is, so I'd just be guessing. Carboli said that he thought they would not dress him. I would think maybe in week one, just to be safe, you do because it's the Ravens, but I don't have a strong view. You got a strong view?
Well, I think, he said that, who was it? Dulac, I think, said they might could only dress two tight ends, too. I don't see that happening. I think you've got Saunders, on, you know, with those three tight end sets. I think he dresses. Dixon, I could very well see Dixon not dressing, but, you know, I think if Charlie Batch is forced to enter the game, I think you got to be careful and make sure you just protect him. A little bit of max protection here might change how you attack the Ravens there. So I don't know. You know, it's going to be different to see how these teams around the league use this new rule with being able to essentially dress one more player there. So Cotrie, I don't know. I mean, you can definitely – you have Arnaz Battle there as a – six receivers should you need them. How many five wide receiver sets will they really use initially here in the year, and can Battle be one of those five? So I think let's watch the status of Cotrie over the next few days here at practice, and that could be a telling tale how he ends up on the injury report.
Yeah, I think for both these guys, it's practice today, probably get a helmet. Don't practice today, don't get a helmet. I think it's pretty simple. First week of the season, don't need to take risks with injuries with guys who are 70-80%. And I think you're right. I think you and I'll have a sense of that by the end of today when we see the practice report. All right, let's move on to a couple bigger NFL topics. We're a little short for time here today. As we said, tomorrow we're going to get to our full, complete breakdown, offense, defense, of how we think this Ravens-Steelers game is going to come out, and we will get to our picks, our week one picks, which we were just crushing people in last year. Actually, I think, Dave, you crushed it, and I wasn't very good, particularly down the stretch. But nobody needs to go back and check that right now. The big news in the NFL, Peyton Manning out for week one. we've heard every rumor in the book that, you know, he could be back by week two. He could be out for the season. So again, you know, I hate wasting time speculating, but the one thing that's coming out of this for sure is Brett Favre's consecutive game starting streak is now going to be etched in the books for the rest of our lives and maybe permanently into history.
Yeah, and you know the Manning thing, that's interesting how it affects the Steelers too, because you know they see them are scheduled to play the Colts in week 3. There's some rumors going around that Manning, this, you know, he might miss the season. Now that's unconfirmed. It's a radio reporter out of Indianapolis, I guess, but a well-respected one at that. This is going to be huge if he's not ready by week 3, and I think there's a good chance that he won't be, and the Steelers will probably face Kerry Collins that week. And as a Steeler fan, you really gotta be thankful if that does indeed happen.
This is not an 8-8 team without Peyton Manning. They are not making the playoffs. They're not going to be anywhere close. It's, you know, for them, the difficulty is right here. They open with Houston. The Steelers get Houston in week 4. This is a team that got Jonathan Joseph added at corner. They've upgraded a little bit on their defense. They brought Wade Phillips in to change their defensive scheme. So, you know, it would put them a little behind the eight ball right out of the chute. Now, just like the Ravens-Steeler games. Look, somebody's going to lose this game. Somebody's going to lose that game. It's not the end of the season. Even if the Steelers lose a game, which I think they won't, it's not the end of the season. But for Indianapolis without Peyton Manning, it would make things somewhat difficult. Dave, another quarterback move that happened this week that was a little surprising. It happened after cuts were made, but before contracts are guaranteed, is David Garrard got released in Jacksonville, very similar to the situation that Byron Leftwich went through in 2007. Any thoughts on what's going on down there? What are your thoughts on him as a quarterback, and what are your thoughts on Jack Del Rio and what's going on in that organization?
Well, when they say it's not about the money, it's usually about the money. And I think there was something like $8 million or something he would have counted. And if this guy has been as bad in practice as they said. You know, reportedly they gave him one last chance in that final practice, and I think he threw 3 interceptions or something like that. They went inside and made the decision to do that. You don't just make a decision like that on one practice. So this had to be brewing for a while. Garrard has not looked good in the preseason for the brief bit of tape I've kind of part of some games that I've seen on him there. This was coming. That the move is on to Blaine Gabbert. The other kid will be a stopgap for him in the meantime here at quarterback for him. It's not going to be long until you see Gabbert. By the time the Steelers play Jacksonville on the schedule, Gabbert's going to be under center. I think it's a little bit, you know, that this is the second time they've done it with Leftwich and now Garrard. So the writing's on the wall. And I think Garrard, other than that killing the Steelers a couple years ago, play, you know, we'll always remember there. But, you know, I think Garrard's on the backside and about done.
Yeah, I've never been overly impressed with the guy. I'm not surprised they did this. The GM took the fall today for saying it was his decision, which, you know, he's clearly saying it, at the end of the day, it's a money decision. This can be better spent other places. Nobody's looking at this team and saying this is a playoff team. I'm generally in agreement with you. What's the latest on Carson Palmer? There were some, I guess, later denied reports that he was seen in Cincinnati, that he had some conversations with the Bengals. Do we know anything more than what we've known all offseason?
None. I think a lot of it's still a lot of speculation in there. Hey, you know, Mike Brown's call, you called this guy's bluff. If Carson comes back now, I don't see how he starts. I think he's second fiddle behind Dalton now. Even though Carson gives him the better chance to win, Dalton's played the whole preseason. They know that this team is not one that's going to make the playoffs, even if Palmer is there. So, you know, I think they're gonna let Palmer sit in the situation that he's created for himself. I still think they should trade him. I think if somebody goes down here early in the season, heck, maybe if Kerry Collins falters right out of the chute for the Colts and Manning is indeed lost for the year, maybe they get a first or second round pick and a piece of chicken or something for him, you know. But Mike Brown, he says he's not going to trade him, but I think if the price is right, everybody's tradable.
Yeah, Mike Brown is the one guy who might not fall into that category. But yeah, I generally agree that we'll be interested to see if the price that other teams are willing to offer goes up here as the season starts and maybe injuries start to hit. Dave, if you were going to pick one team in the AFC and one team in the NFC that maybe you disagree with kind of where people are coming out in terms of this team's going to be the surprise. In the NFC, people are looking at the Lions as the big team that they expect to take a step forward. In the AFC, maybe it's a little less clear. But anybody, any one or two teams that you want to focus on that stand out before we get into our picks tomorrow?
As far as the AFC goes, I think it's going to be pretty cut and dry in there. I there's no team that I say, oh, this team has a shot at making the playoffs and they don't deserve it. San Diego, I think, they sure seem to be high on San Diego's special teams of all things, heading into.
But it can't get worse, right? And right. Anything's an improvement.
Yeah, that's true too. I think it's going to be them and the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs are a little bit overrated, maybe heading into this year. I like the Jamal Charles kid. In the end, though, I think that it's going to be the Chargers division there. So no surprises in the AFC. In the NFC, I think you nailed it, though. I think we're a year ahead of ourselves on the Lions here. It is the Lions, after all, okay? Now, they have a great young defense up and coming here. I like what they're doing on offense, but if Matthew Stafford cannot stay healthy, that offense is going nowhere. I think there's some questions in the backfield as well. I think the best division to watch there is going to be the, the South there with the Saints, the Falcons, yep, and the Buccaneers. I think all three of those teams are just going to beat the snot out of each other. And you could see a situation with two of those teams, having 10 or 11 wins there and maybe one not even making it. I mean, we'll get to see the Saints up close and personal tonight against the Packers, and that ought to be a damn good game. But as you mentioned too earlier, if you lose this game, it's no big deal. It's the first damn game of the season. But I think the Lions are a little bit overrated in the NFC there, and who knows what's going to happen in the East and the West.
Yeah, I think the NFC West is always a fun division. It's fun because we're not attached to it. You got four teams that are in big markets that are obviously looking to win. The Skins have been the stepchild the last few years, and they had a good preseason. So it'll be interesting if they can carry it through. Dallas has underperformed, and we'll see with the Eagles with all the additions they made. That'll be a fun division to watch. The team that I expect to take a step back is the Bears. I don't think they're any good. I think Tampa probably takes a step back as well. And, I think we're going to see some teams who aren't good this year, maybe more so than in years past. We talk about how everybody liked to complain about how there was parity. My view is this year, you're going to see a lack of parity. The Dolphins, the Bengals, the Titans, the Jaguars, Denver, Minnesota maybe, Chicago, Tampa, Carolina, maybe not Tampa, Carolina, Seattle. We could have seven or eight teams with six wins or less, which would be something a little different than I think we've seen in years past.
Yeah, the haves and the have-nots this year. I don't think there'll be a lot of 500 or just a game under 500 teams. I'm with you. I think you could see a lot of 5 and 6 win teams out there, and I think you could see multiple teams with more than 12 wins this year.
Yeah, double-digit wins for sure.
Yep.
Dave, all right, we've cut a lot of time here, and we're going to come back at them tomorrow. Anything you want to add before we close?
Tonight's game, Green Bay at home, defending Super Bowl champions, getting Finley back. I think it'll be just enough. I think this is a one-point game. I think Green Bay wins it 28-27.
So that means you put your money on the Saints.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, let's get off on opposite foots just to make it easy. I'm a big fan of what the Saints have done. I like their new running back tandems. Always a Drew Brees fan, but I have to tell you, my Aaron Rodgers is really good. I think with all the guys Green Bay's gotten back from the injured reserve, I think they win this game. I don't think it's a blowout. I think it's a high-scoring, entertaining game. I'm going to give you the Pack 31, the Saints 24.
All right, fair enough there. And that's going to be tonight that's on NBC. So we look forward to that, and football's back.
And we'll be back with you tomorrow with our third edition of Week 1 of the NFL season of the Terrible Podcast. It'll be our Steelers-Ravens breakdown. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Dave and Dave, the Terrible Podcast.